Hi, you're listening to the Wayfinding Podcast. We are your hosts, Joe Thomas and Jonathan King. This podcast is brought to you by Life Together House. This is a podcast for those who think history matters. Here we will listen to the lives of faithful Christians who have come before us as they help us find our way today as followers of Jesus Christ. We'll walk together through the events, places, and relationships that shaped their lives, telling their story, learning from their witness, navigating our path in today's world. This is Season 1, Wayfinding with Dietrich Bonhoeffer.
In the dark night of Nazi Germany,
In nomine Patris et Filii et Spiritus Sancti. Amen.
Dietrich Bonhoeffer called for uncompromising obedience to Jesus Christ.
Welcome to Wayfinding with Dietrich Bonhoeffer. In today's episode, we are going to explore some of Bonhoeffer's unfinished thoughts from prison, written at the end of his life. Thoughts on a church in a world come of age. Joe, I'll start us off with some of Bonhoeffer's own words taken from the letter written to his longtime friend and confidant, Bethke, written on April 30th, 1944, a little over a year into his imprisonment. Dietrich confessed he was sharing some new theological thoughts which might catch Bethke off guard and surprise or perhaps even worry him. Joe, what was so revolutionary about these new ideas that Bonhoeffer felt the need to attach a warning label to them?
That's a great question. Bonhoeffer, once he gets into prison, really for the first time in many years, he has the opportunity to sit back and reflect. His life had been so consumed with the confessing church and the Finkenwalde, the seminary, and trying to work with the underground church that was going on there, that once he gets into prison, it allows him just that time to reflect. And there, he starts to reflect on broader things than just the war. Broader in the sense of what's going on in Western civilization. And as he thinks about it, some conclusions that he starts to come to are that humanity, and particularly the Western person, was losing his religious nature or need for religion, what he called the religious a priori. This was an idea that the church had accepted for 2,000 years, which is that humans are naturally religious beings and have a desire to be religious. Well, of course, Bonhoeffer is right there at the turn of the 19th into the 20th century when Europe, particularly Germany, had become highly secularized. More and more people were starting to ask the question, do we need God? Aren't we capable ourselves as humans to handle the problems that we have? And so he starts to think very, very deeply about that question. Is humanity even religious? And he put it this way, we are approaching a completely religionless age. People as they are now simply cannot be religious anymore. But our entire 1900 years of Christian preaching and theology are built on the religious a priori in human beings.
The movement toward human autonomy has reached a certain completeness in our age. Human beings have learned to manage all important issues by themselves, without recourse to a working hypothesis, God. The world, now that it has become conscious of itself and the laws of its existence, is sure of itself. Failures, things going wrong, can't shake the world's confidence in the necessity of its course and its development. Such things are accepted with fortitude and sobriety as part of the bargain. And even an event like this war is no exception.
This is an idea with some serious gravitas, Joe. So Bonhoeffer believed that the age of religion was over, that those signs were all around him. And suddenly he found himself on a journey to discover Christianity after religion. Bonhoeffer surmised that the world had come of age, to use his arresting phrase. It had left its infancy and become an adult. And just as an adult relies more and more upon oneself, its need for its parent diminishes. In short, religion no longer was needed in a world come of age. This insight suggested to Bonhoeffer that religion was not something innate, religious a priori, but simply a stage which humanity was passing through, Joe?
Well, this is going to impact and really inspire Bonhoeffer to think in creative new ways, particularly as it came to apologetics. Because up to this time, really all of the history of Christianity had worked on the assumption that humans are naturally religious. Now all of a sudden, he's asking the question, if humans are non-religious, if religiosity was just a stage that humans had passed through, and now we're on the other side of it in this non-religious time period, what does that mean for the Christian faith? What's the Christian faith look like for non-religious people? And so one area that he really started to evaluate and even critique was in the area of apologetics. If we were simply trying to make people feel a certain way so that they'd be more receptive to the gospel, he started to question, are we doing that correctly? How should we be communicating with them? And that became a very important question to him.
Religious people speak of God at a point where human knowledge is at an end, or where human strength fails. Actually, is a deus ex machina they always bring on the scene, thus always exploiting human weakness or human limitations. Inevitably, that lasts only until human beings become powerful enough to push the boundaries a bit further, and God is no longer needed as deus ex machina.
He started to think that preaching shouldn't be trying to lead people to despair, and then Jesus or the gospel was like a device in a play that comes in and kind of rescues the scene. This was called the deus ex machina. This was a common device in plays and in novels where it looked like you were in a situation where there was no solution. You would roll out this deus ex machina, which actually means God in the machine. And Bonhoeffer was using that as an analogy. That's how apologetics had been working this entire time. We drive people to despair so that then we can bring in the gospel to rescue them. He's asking the question now, what if people are no longer in a place where they're feeling despair? Their confidence is growing. And he asked the question, what does apologetics look like for people who are feeling confident about their capacity? Because let's not forget, this is the time period where amazing amounts of technological inventions and innovations are going on. And so he's addressing that. He's influenced here a lot by Friedrich Nietzsche, who is basically critiquing Christianity as an atheistic philosopher as being too otherworldly, and that it needs to be more this worldly. That's the problem with Christianity. Bonhoeffer is using that as a filter to think this through. Are we too otherworldly? Do we need our apologetics to actually address people where they're at in their confidence in this world? And if it is, what's that look like?
In very different forms, the Christian apologetic is now moving against the self-confidence. It is trying to persuade the world that it has come of age, that it cannot live without God as its guardian.
But Joe, does this mean there were no existential questions for which the church had any ground to stand on? What about the essentials of death and guilt?
Bonhoeffer was willing to concede that those still had power, but he still wanted to ask the question, what happens if we get to a place where death and guilt even seem to have an explanation for them, that humans no longer fear them? So it's interesting if you think about that for a second, right? In our own age here in the 21st century, guilt in many ways is passé. You're no longer feeling guilty. You just made a mistake that you learned from. We don't have moral failure. We have mistakes. And so in some ways, he's being very prophetic here in pointing out that while in his day and age, those two twin ideas of guilt and death still had some cachet with the people of that time period, what happens again, apologetically, when they don't? You can think about death, even death. People are reevaluating death from a world come of age. This is a phrase that he uses, a world come of age, is that the world has become mature. And as a child grows up and no longer needs their parent, he was using as an analogy that the civilization, particularly Western civilization, had grown up and no longer thought it needed God. And so Even death is a great example, because today we have transhumanism and these ideas of, can we live indefinitely? Can we just replace parts? Can we put ourselves in robots? Is the essence of us able, are we able to keep that alive? So he's very prophetic here, because we actually have reached that point in time.
As Bonhoeffer reflected on his moment in history, he recognized that the church had nowhere left to reposition itself, to take a stand. If it continued to believe, current apologetics could prevail.
We get to a place where Christianity had been in this sort of rear guard action, where the apologetic would be placed where our knowledge ended, where human knowledge ended. That's where we would place the apologetic. See, we need God, because we don't have knowledge beyond this point. Bonhoeffer referred to this as the God of the gaps. That was a critique of the apologetics. We have a God of the gaps apologetic. He kept asking the same questions. What happens as that gap gets smaller and smaller, which indeed it has? You know, and again, there's that very sort of prophetic voice that he has. And so for him, he says, we can't keep retreating back to this God of the gaps, because eventually we're not going to have any ground to stand on. It's all disappearing. And so instead of retreating, Bonhoeffer is going to start to advocate, we need to advance. We need to advance into the world come of age, into where the world is strong. Bring Jesus into the strengths of the world, and help the world to see that where it's flourishing, where it has strength, is because of God, not because of itself. That's the major problem here, as Bonhoeffer addresses it. Humanity had put itself in the place of God, no new story there, but they had done it in the place of, with great scientific innovation and advancement. And so he's searching for a way to bring Jesus into where the world is strongest, to reveal to the world that the flourishing is actually what the scriptures have been calling for all along. This is part of our being in, made in the image of God, is that we have capacity, we have capability, and part of that capacity and capability is to remake the world, to use the creative juices that God has given us, to use the materials that he's given us in this world to make something beautiful, culture making. And so humanity's been doing that, but they always twist it from something that's good into something that's self-serving, ego-driven, even evil at times. And so Bonhoeffer is asking, how do we bring Christ into this place to help the world realize that flourishing is shalom of the Old Testament? It is the vision in the book of Revelation of the new heavens and the new earth. And so that's where he's thinking, is how to do that.
Joe, this religionless Christianity, it really was an explosive idea, but we didn't really get to see him work out those ideas and develop that, did we? Just with his life being cut short. There's a tantalizing mix of theological and prophetic insights there. Bonhoeffer believed the future of the church would be useful, if not quite sanguine, if it would embrace this new reality, right? Considering he was a condemned man, writing from a prison cell as the world was literally falling apart around him, his words provided Bethge a breathtaking eschatological perspective of hope about the future of the church.
It is not for us to predict a day, but the day will come when people will once more be called to speak the word of God in such a way that the world is changed and renewed. It will be a new language, perhaps quite non-religious language, but liberating and redeeming like Jesus' language, so that the people will be alarmed and yet overcome by its power. The language of new righteousness and truth, a language proclaiming that God makes peace with humankind, and that God's kingdom is drawing near. They shall fear and tremble because of all the good and all the prosperity I provide for them.
Yeah, he has a great quote where he talks about this new language. He perceives in the future that we will develop a new language. So this is part of that apologetic, that a new language will be developed to talk about Christ in a world come of age. And the new language will be arresting and shocking, just like Jesus's words were in the first century. And so that is sort of that vision. How do you shock the world that thinks it has everything that it needs? And so that's the tantalizing future that he's grappling for.
In this moment that we're in, Joe, of deconstruction and so many people questioning the church, walking away, many from their spiritual heritage, it just seems this is such a pressing need for us to really continue to reevaluate. How do we, in the words of one author, learn to speak God from scratch? We have to really think about those things as we wayfind today, don't we? So for Bonhoeffer, where did he discover this new language?
He wrestled with that. I think his experience of the previous 5 to 6 years where all his rights, his life was stripped away from him. His church was stripped away from him. Being a pastor was stripped away. A writer was stripped away. Theologian, teacher, mentor, professor, you name it. It was all stripped away from him. That gave him a brand new perspective. Let's not forget, Bonhoeffer was a young man born in privilege. And now all that privilege has been stripped away. And he starts to see the world from below, right? He's now, for the first time, realizing what's it like to be at the bottom of the heap instead of where I've always lived, which was at the privileged top of the heap. And that gets his mind thinking about the church. Has the church become too inundated with the worldly success or the ideas of worldly success to be able to see from below anymore? These are thoughts and letters that are not complete. They're unformed in many ways. You know, so they're tantalizing because it gives us some ideas, but not complete ideas. But he starts to talk about things such as the church giving away all of its property. Now, keep in mind, this is a state church. And so the government, the state, supported the church. So there's lots of beautiful buildings that have been built, churches that have been built, that are very much caught up with the nationalism of Germany. Even before the rise of Nazism, but especially since the rise of Nazism. And so Bonhoeffer is saying, if we're ever going to really be able to live from below, we have to make some of these corrections. We need to get rid of all of our property. Our pastors can't be supported by the state. They need to be supported by the congregation. Now, that's not a radical thought for Americans these days, but in the 1940s, that was a very radical thought in Germany. And so that's where he's looking. He's looking for how do we position ourselves to be able to talk to this world come of age.
Redemption now means being redeemed out of sorrows, hardships, anxieties, and longings, out of sin and death, in a better life beyond. But should this really be the essence of the proclamation of Christ and the Gospels and Paul? I dispute this. The Christian hope of resurrection is different from the mythological in that it refers people to the life on earth in a wholly new way and more sharply than the Old Testament.
And so, Joe, having established this new reality of the world, Bonhoeffer returns us to the Gospel. It's here that he begins, and sadly only begins, since we don't have the full flowering of his ideas, he begins to chart a course forward for the church in a world come of age. And it's in the suffering of God on the cross that the church will find a new non-religious language and life, he says. Historically, the church had held a position of privilege within Western civilization, as we've talked about, but this just is no longer the case. If the church is going to return ever to, quote unquote, the center of the village, it will come through humility and powerlessness. If it seeks to bring the gospel into the strengths of the world, it will come through meekness and service. It is with these thoughts in mind that Bonhoeffer offers this instruction for church reform in a non-religious age.
The church is church only when it's there for others as a first step. It must give away all its property to those in need. The clergy must live solely on the free will offerings of the congregations and perhaps be engaged in some secular vocation. The church must participate in the worldly task of life in community, not dominating, but helping and serving. It must tell people in every calling what a life with Christ is, what it means to be there for others. It will have to speak of moderation, authenticity, trust, faithfulness, steadfastness, patience, discipline, humility, modesty, contentment. It will have to see that it does not underestimate the significance of the human example.
Before he was arrested, Bonhoeffer was at work on his ethics. what he hoped would be his magnum opus. And here we find him already positioning the church in a posture of humility, confessing its complicity in the lawlessness of Nazi Germany. He writes, "The church confesses that it has witnessed the lawless application of brutal force, the physical and spiritual suffering of countless innocent people, oppression, hatred, and murder, and that it has not raised its voice on behalf of the victims and has not found ways to hasten to their aid. The church confesses that it has desired security, peace and quiet, possessions and honor to which it had no right," end quote. But confession leads to forgiveness and ultimately reconciliation. It's here that Bonhoeffer envisioned the church playing a great role in the necessary healing that must follow the great conflict between nations, Joe, and between peoples. Perhaps beginning with the confession of guilt, the church could be renewed too and find the new language it needed to preach to a world come of age. Bonhoeffer ventured to suggest that the fiery trial that the church had endured over the past several years might be the refiner's fire needed to speak again with the authority of Jesus Christ.
Well, Jonathan, you know, paradoxically, it's in this weakness that Bonhoeffer begins to discover the new strength for the church. In its powerlessness, there's a new power. He writes that God consents to be pushed out of the world and onto the cross. And so, as is so often with Dietrich Bonhoeffer, he brings it back to Jesus Christ. Christ is the center of all his theological thought. And so, as we get into his wrestling with this world come of age, the world come of age in all its power and glory has pushed the Son of God out of the way and onto the cross. But that's perfect as far as Bonhoeffer is concerned, because that's where Jesus redeems the world. And so as he thinks about this ability now to interact with the world come of age with a new language, it must come through this great humility that Jesus Christ displays, the willingness to come down from heaven to earth and then to be crucified on a cross. And it's in this humility that will allow the church to start to be recognized at the center of the village again, as he so wonderfully puts it. And only then, it's paradoxical. The world pushes Jesus out of the world and onto the cross, but through the crucifixion, Christ then has the power and empowers us, empowers the church to come back into the strengths of the world and speak a new language, one, again, that will be shocking and arresting to a world come of age.
Such a challenging but good and necessary word for us today, Joe, coming out of 2 years of a pandemic, political upheaval, racial unrest, war in Ukraine, and a brooding sense of unrest and discomfort around the world, particularly here in the West. I think as the church has become quieter in some ways and troubled. And again, so many people walking away from the church, just wrestling with abuse and difficulty, so many people questioning. I just hear so much in Bonhoeffer's words here. Again, not that our situation is at all the same, but just such prophetic words, I think, for the church in the West today, and particularly here in America, for us to pay attention to. Well, listeners, thank you for joining us for this episode today on some of Bonhoeffer's thoughts from the end of his life in prison on world come of age and religionless Christianity and so much more. Well, in this season of Wayfinding, as you've journeyed with us, we've explored Bonhoeffer's witness by looking at his path of resistance, several paths of resistance. We've looked at his views of the Bible. We've talked about his discernment of God's will. We've looked at Bonhoeffer's involvement in the conspiracy to kill Hitler and in his legacy in South Africa. And now in this episode, his unfinished thoughts from prison about the church for the future. But be sure to stay tuned for one more episode, a bonus track, if you will, in which Joe and I are going to discuss more of the implications of Bonhoeffer's thoughts for our lives today as wayfinders of Jesus Christ. As always, be sure to reach out to Joe or I with any questions or comments. And thank you for listening.